Hello. Here's an intro. I'm Mackenzie Morgan. I'm a computer science student. In my spare time, I work on Kubuntu. I work on any Ubuntu stuff, but I'm a primarily Kubuntu user now. Before, I've played with Debian, Fedora, Sabayon. And at work, I have to do QA on software running on Red Hat, Zeus, Solaris, AIX, all sorts of fun things that are very different. The purpose of this talk is because every now and then you're sitting there and you're like, I'm an admin, I know how to use this distro, I'm really good at it, and the boss just said we're using something else now. Oh, what do? Everything's different. So find yourself in that situation and you're trying to learn what the other ones are. You can hopefully at the end of this use these slides as a cheat sheet. So first thing we're going to cover is package management. The reason that's coming first is because there are a lot of commands available that do all sorts of useful things. And installing and uninstalling things is something you do really often. Usually you get something configured and then you don't touch it, but somebody requesting, I want more software to do more fun things is not uncommon. So the first thing we have to go over is, what are the basic commands that you're going to need and the tools that you use for them? Debian's got a much longer list than Red Hat and Fedora do on here. We'll get to how you can avoid having to remember all of them. First thing is, how are packages named? Red Hat's fairly simple. This is what software is, Python. This is its version, 2.6. This is the version of the packaging, that's one. Here, do this.
What's the difference between software name and, never mind, sorry.
Okay, that's here, there. And then you have the architecture, fairly straightforward. Debian's a little bit more complicated in its package naming. Let's go back a second. Sometimes you'll see one more field on there. That is, what version of Linux is it for? Usually you'll find this in third party repositories. You'll see ones that say EL5, meaning Red Hat Enterprise Linux 5, or you'll see ones that say SLES 9 or whatever version, because not all RPMs work on all RPM-based distros. They're going to have different library versions, and every once in a while, that's going to break things. Okay, so Debian is a little bit more complicated. They give the software name, and then if it's a library, they give the library version after it. So that's why we have Python 2.6 instead of just Python as the name. Then you have what version it is. So this is specifically 2.6.2. Then in this case, it's the third time that it was packaged for Debian. You know, maybe they had to do some patches in there. Then the architecture, and then obviously ends in .deb. I also included an Ubuntu example because, so we have three Ubuntu 1 here. And the way that works is it tells you that it was based on the third Debian release of that package, and Ubuntu has done something to it once. Sometimes you'll see 0 Ubuntu 3, and that means it's not in Debian, it's just in Ubuntu. Oh yeah, I had a fun story about the way packages are named. I have a friend, Ben, he works on Xorg stuff, and he was always tracking Fedora's unstable as his development environment. And one thing he told me, you know, I don't really like Ubuntu and Debian because I don't really like their package naming. I mean, why do they have to have that extra 2.6 in there, the extra number after the library? Like, why can't they just have the name? I'm like, well, I don't know, but I mean, I guess that's a better cosmetic reason than it's brown and I can change the wallpaper anyway. A few months later, he comes to me and goes, I think I have to switch to Ubuntu. I'm like, why is that? He's like, well, Fedora doesn't have Python 3 and Ubuntu does. And they don't have, it's like, as far as I can tell, they don't have plans to include it anytime soon. And it seems that the fact that you have that version right in the package name is the reason that you're able to have the parallel install ones on Ubuntu and why Fedora doesn't have it, because they'd both just be called Python with different version numbers. You won't be able to tell them apart. So I thought that was kind of funny. He didn't use it because of the package name, and then he started using it because of the package name. Okay, so very basics of depackage and RPM. In this case, I have for RPM, capital UVH. You could also use IVH. The reason I'm putting the capital U is because that also updates. So if you've already got the package installed and you use minus I, it's going to say, but this is already installed. What are you asking me to do? If you use the U, it'll say, this is already installed and you want me to upgrade it. Got it. For the remove, the way to remember those letters is dpackage says remove, RPM says erase. Same difference. In both cases, you only need to give the package name at the, you know, you don't have to give the full package, blah, 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 RPM or .deb. For the remove, you just have the beginning of it. And then you've got the repositories. There's nothing new to learn whenever you switch between Red Hat stuff and Debian stuff, because remove and install are all the same, great. Moving on. But why did I have an apt-get and an aptitude on the Debian directions there? Well, used to be that aptitude would always install the recommends packages and it would track what was installed manually, meaning you said aptitude install foo. And it was installed automatically, which means you said aptitude install foo and bar was a dependency, so it was pulled in. What apt-get used to do in those situations was it would remove foo and keep bar. So you had all these things that were installed as dependencies just sitting around as orphans. Aptitude, because it could track that stuff, would automatically remove the packages that no longer had anything depending on them whenever you removed whatever had pulled them in. Nowadays, there was also a software called DebOrphan that could hunt down and find the orphan packages and tell you, oh yeah, this big list here, you don't need any of it. Now, apt-get can pay attention to what's there, why. And so when you remove something, it'll say, by the way, you don't need this stuff. And so if you go type apt-get auto remove, I can get rid of those for you. But it doesn't remove them automatically. I should point out that aptitude is only going to have this behavior if you always use aptitude. Anything installed by apt-get will not be in aptitude's manual automatic database, and so it won't know why it's there. In my opinion, the main reason to use aptitude now is, well, some commands start out apt-get, and some commands start out apt-cache, and a lot of those commands are in aptitude, so you can just type aptitude and it'll work. Example right here. How do you find a package? Now you might sit there and go, apt-get search. Well, that didn't work. That's because that's one of those apt-cache ones that gets all nice and confusing and why isn't it apt-get? Why isn't everything apt-get? And so use aptitude. Aptitude actually has much nicer output on it too, because it says alphabetizes it, and there's a little column over there that's like I for install, P for purge. Great. Red Hat, you just use yum search your two, or your search terms. If you give it two search terms like this, though, on yum, you'll get a list of everything that shows up for yum, and then after that, I'm sorry, everything that shows up for text, and then after that, a list of everything that shows up for editor. Not everything that shows up for text and editor. But, whatever. So what if I want to install a lot of packages? Do I have to type these commands, you know, apt-get install vim, apt-get install terminator, apt-get install, no, you can apt-get install vim terminator, you can get both at once. That's the list them all part. Or there are meta packages. In the Debian world, there's task cell and there's group install for yum. So meta packages are packages that have absolutely nothing in them. They just say, I depend on all this. No, really, I do need them to run. Uh-huh. And so the package manager goes, okay, I'll go get those for you. And then you end up with a whole bunch of stuff installed. For example, you're trying to compile something and you need your compilers, your kernel headers, your what have you, linkers, just apt-get install build essential, got it all, everybody's happy. Debian also has a thing called task cell. You can just run task cell as root and say, I need to be able to complete this task, mail server, and choose that. It's a TUI application, so it's one of those ones where you hit tab and hit the space bar to select the boxes, and yeah. And then in Yum, you've got group install, which you can, if you do Yum group install quotes development tools, and yes, you have to use the quotes, it's roughly equivalent to the build essential example, although it does pull in quite a bit more. It'll pull in common development libraries as well. And oh, by the way, when you're about to compile something and you realize you don't have headers for all these things that all these headers that you need to be able to compile with, and you're searching for a package, you're looking for dash dev ones on Debian and dash devel ones on Red Hat. If you're trying to look for dash devel on Debian, it's not going to work. Okay, so you've got everything installed. You need to stay up to date because, well, there are all these evil crackers out there and they're trying to get into your system and blah, blah, blah. So you need your security updates. Well, how do you find out what packages are currently available in the repositories? You've got, in the case of apt-get or aptitude, you can use update. In Yum, that's check update. Until I found out about check update, I was kind of confused because Yum update, as you see down here, right there, that does update the package lists, but it also installs the new packages. And so that's a little bit confusing whenever you switch between them and you're like, you know, you might switch from Yum to apt-get and you're like, apt-get update, and you expect it to go and fetch all the new updates, and why didn't it install anything? So those are separate. In actuality, in the apt world, you have to use upgrade. Now, I listed aptitude safe upgrade on the slide because what happened is, if you see these, the apt-get upgrade and the aptitude safe upgrade, and you see apt-get dist upgrade and aptitude full upgrade, aptitude used to use the same names as apt-get. Those are now deprecated. I think the reasoning was probably somewhere along the lines of, but you have to run apt-get dist upgrade even in cases where you're not going from etch to Lenny, or Lenny to sketch, whatever the new thing is. I'm sorry, I forget what's currently in testing. But so they changed it to safe upgrade and full upgrade. And the semantics of these are that if you're using upgrade or safe upgrade, no new packages will be added and no existing packages will be removed. They will only change version on packages currently installed. When, say, you want to install a new kernel, and that's a different package name, you're going to have to do a dist upgrade or full upgrade to get that. Or in the case that something has become obsolete and you want that obsolete package to go away now because it's not getting updates anymore, this is bad, then that's also the point of dist upgrade and full upgrade. Also, in cases where, you know, the archive is broken because whatever, some package hasn't been updated at the right version yet, it's still building, and you've got a dependency on the new version, and safe upgrade will say, okay, I'll just ignore those packages right now that are broken, and we can come back to those later. Full upgrade will attempt to do something to them. Yum upgrade acts the same way, at least as regards obsolete packages. I think regular Yum update is willing to install new stuff though. But okay, now what if I don't want to update the entire repository? Like, what if I just want this one package to be updated? Okay, in apt-get, you just try to install it again, and apt will go, oh, this is already installed, you must want something new. Which seems a little bit overloading the term install. Yum, update, Python, same thing. That one makes more sense to me. Okay, so I installed Apache. I screwed up the configuration. I want to get it back to default. How do I do that? Well, I might think I uninstall it, and then I reinstall it, and I should have all new configuration now, right? I mean, I removed everything. In Red Hat, you're correct. In Debian, no. Your configuration stays put. You have to actually purge the package, is what they call it. So you can do apt-get purge, name of the package, and then you'll actually get rid of the config files for it. I'm just using Python the whole way through as examples. All right, that's basic stuff. Now here's, you're an admin, you're trying to figure out, I hit this bug, and I need to tell the vendor that it's broken, and I don't know which package is broken. It's just, it's in that file over there. How do I find out what package it is? Debian, you say dpackage minus big L, whatever file it is, it'll list the package and then file name. Red Hat, you say rpm minus qf, the file name. And one other thing I wanted to point out in this section, because it kind of fits, is say you're compiling something and, well, I need foo/bar.h. What package contains foo/bar.h for my development headers? There's this utility called aptfile. So you install it, and then you have to run aptfile update, and it goes and pulls the contents.gz from the repository, which is just like the packages.gz. And actually, one of my friends was explaining to me how this works yesterday, so because I just knew it works. And it has a list of every file and every package in the repository. And so it stores that, says, all right, anytime you ask me, I'll just look it up. So you can tell it a file name, like foo/bar.h, and it'll say, okay, well, bar.h exists in all these packages. And so then you can look through and be like, well, I know it's completely unrelated to Qt, so it's not that one. It's this one up here that I need. So you can find out a bit easier what header package you need. Okay, so let's say you've got a package installed, you just hit that bug, right? And you just figured out which package it was, so you can go complain to the vendor, and they go, okay, well, which version did you find that bug in? And you go, the one that's installed? You want to find that out. You can do dpackage minus L and then the package name, or I kind of like this one, apt cache policy and the package name will tell you both. It'll tell you a bit more info. It'll tell you, this is what version you have installed, this is what repository it's from, and this is what the most up-to-date version is that's available, and in which repository that is, of repositories that you have configured. So it gives you a bit more info than dpackage minus L does. For Red Hat, I couldn't come up with a shorter command than this, I'm sorry, but rpm minus qi and a package gives you information about the package, and then you can use awk to spit out the right little chunk of information. All right, that's the end of package management. Now we're going on to where do files end up, because sometimes they end up in weird places. So we're talking about, hang on a second. I was saying that, apt cache policy is only going to tell you about whatever repositories you have configured. It can't know about that repository that your friend Sarah has set up somewhere and hasn't told him about. That's her own private one. So you want to configure stuff in Debian in etc apt sources.list, and in Red Hat you've got usually a separate file for each repository, etc yum.repos.d/blah blah blah repo. You can also have, there is also a etc app sources.list.d/whatever, and you can add more individual files in there if you wanted, up to you. And once you've downloaded packages using yum or apt or whatever, where do they end up? Well, they're both in var cache and then the name of whatever you use to download them. Debian also adds a directory called archives. I don't know why, but it does. Oh, actually, I have an idea why. I think it might store information on, I think the app database might be in there. And look. All right, this is the one that always gets me. Every time I have to every time that I have to configure the interfaces on a Red Hat machine, I have to go look this one up. Hopefully, the fact that I'm saying this out loud and have typed it up in the last 24 hours means it's going to stick in my head now. But Etsy network interfaces for Debian, for Red Hat, it's a bit longer. You have Etsy sysconfig, which sysconfig is a directory you're only going to find in the Red Hat world. /if/something.cfg. So you have an individual file for each interface. So if you have, you're configuring ETH0, you have if-eth0.cfg, if you're configuring WLAN0, etc. The syntax for them is different as well, I believe. That's a whole lot of info, like that could take a half hour on itself. So for those man pages, I know on Debian it's man5 interfaces. It's how I use the internet now because of network manager being weird. But okay, so if you saw the KDE table outside, one of the machines had the time zone wrong whenever I walked by, so we fixed it. But if you run into that situation or you come across some admin before you decided it was a good idea to set the hardware clock to local time, and now that you've fixed that in the BIOS, the machine's time is really wrong. Okay, these are the files you want to screw with in that case. Etsy time zone, Etsy sysconfig clock. Fairly straightforward if you're going around and typing ls in a whole bunch of directories until you hit something that looks sane. This one is not obvious. You've installed some kernel module. You compiled it, you want to add it. It's not one that everything's aware of, and so you need to tell it, by the way, when you boot, load this module, please. Debian, you've got Etsy modules, Red Hat puts it elsewhere again. More of the sysconfig stuff. I don't know why they use sysconfig for everything. I guess it was an attempt at making things simpler. I don't know. But that one is called udev stw, and I don't know why. It's go figure, but that's what it is. All right, this one I have more distros on the list. In my day job, I do QA on OpenAFS, and so this is the sort of fun things that I like to, that I run into whenever I'm compiling AFS. There's a thing called Kerberos 5 config that if you're compiling any software to use Kerberos 5 for authentication, you're going to have to tell it where this file is because it has absolutely no standard place. So you can see Debian puts it in user bin, Red Hat has a user Kerberos bin directory, SUSE has user MIT directory. I don't know why they couldn't agree on one. And then for Solaris, which I know it's not Linux, but that goes and uses the whole opt thing because the way to get it in there is go install a decent package manager on Solaris. This is one somebody pointed out to me is a pain in the rear. You're trying to configure your web server and you can't find the right config file because the directory's not even there. You're a Red Hat user, you go into Debian, you go, Etsy there's no Apache, okay, hang on, go install Apache. Wait, there's still no Apache 2 directory. What? For, I guess, compatibility, backwards compatibility, legacy stuff, Debian still calls it httpd and has its own httpd conf file. Red Hat's way, it's backwards? I'm sorry. Well, I can't modify it at the moment. I'll change that before I upload it. I don't have a web server installed on my machine, so I couldn't double check it. Okay, so flip that. They have them. The point is, they have them in funny places with non-obvious names, and then you go and install a package, and you're like, I still don't see its directory. What happened? Well, there are symlinks and imports and things like that to blame. So this one was difficult to figure out, actually. The firewall, when you set up your IP tables and you've got your IP tables restore, IP tables save, etc., you know, Red Hat, that one was pretty simple. All right, I'm looking for something and it's not in Etsy. I'll just go check sysconfig. That's really how I deal with Red Hat a lot of the time is, I don't know where they put that file, it's probably in sysconfig. With Debian, I had to go Google that one. I'm using Ubuntu here, so I was like, all right, Ubuntu doesn't use IP tables directly. It has a wrapper. Where does Debian put this thing? I gotta Google it. So, var, that is an odd place for config file. So it's in var lib IP tables. And this is one that I've hit a bunch of times. At one point I was dual booting between Ubuntu and Fedora, and it kept telling me, your home directory is not owned by your user. I was going, what? Yes it is. Okay, chmod to me. Then I'd reboot into the other one. Your home directory is not owned by your user. What? But I just, what? All right, Debian starts user UIDs and GIDs at 1,000, and Red Hat starts at 500. So you may be the first user on the system, you may have the same username. That doesn't matter. File systems go by the UID and GID. And so then you can't write your own home directory. Lovely. To deal with this, you can change one of the two systems. You don't have to change both. You could either edit your Debian adduser.conf or your Red Hat login.defs and change it so that you're telling Debian, okay, consider 499 the highest system UID and 500 the lowest user ID, or you can switch it and tell Red Hat, consider 999 the highest system and 1,000 the lowest user. Either one works, you only have to do one on one of them. If you do that to both of them, you're just going to reverse the problem. I figure this could be useful for system admins where you have the case that you have retained a directory holding, you know, all your users' files where they've got their public HTMLs and you just kept that partition in your system partition, you installed a different distro and now none of your users can reach their files and they are really, really not happy. That's how you fix it. Okay, the last thing is services. I assume most sysadmins know what a run level is. It's a predefined set of scripts that are gonna run at a certain time. Standard ones, you've got 0 is halt, that would be shut down. 6, reboot, and you know, those are the ones that are like definitely defined by all Unix systems as those. And then you have 1. That one is single user mode. That's, you know, you can put that in, you can edit your grub or lilo config and say, boot into single user mode because I need to fix something that's broken. Depending on the distro, it may ask you for the root password, it may not. It might just go straight into it. But how do you know what's in each run level? Okay, if you've just picked up a generic Linux book, it's gonna tell you one thing. If you ask somebody who's used Ubuntu or Debian and they've poked around at things, they're gonna tell you something else. If you ask somebody who's only ever used Red Hat, they're gonna tell you something different. You ask a Gen 2 user, they're gonna tell you something else too. You ask somebody who has gone through this pain and they're gonna give you a different answer. That's probably similar to Wikipedia's answer. Because that's the answer. What is the only distro up there that's going to agree with the generic Linux book? SUSE or SUSE? I have so many times seen people come up and be like, hey, so I switched to Ubuntu and I typed in it 3 and the X was still running. What's broken? It's like, oh, that's just a Debian thing. You can change it, just, yeah, that's just how it is, it's not broken. And I think the difference between Red Hat and SUSE is interesting on this one, where Red Hat doesn't make run level 2 be multi-user, no networking. It makes it be multi-user with some networking and not all. So, what if you want to change what's running because, you know, you started using Debian and you really would like to have your run level 3 not have X? Please, Okay, it used to be that what you were supposed to do was manually create and remove symlinks, which is always so much fun. I mean, I can't be the only person who always looks up man ln and says, wait, now which order do I put these in? Does the name of it come? Okay. Some people would use a command called update rc.d. If you read the docs on that command, it tells you, you're not supposed to be doing this if you're a human. This is for Debian maintainer scripts. This is what packages do. And don't you touch this. Okay, so the proper way was to manually create and remove the symlinks. Red Hat had this nice little utility called checkconfig, made it so easy. Guess what? Debian has checkconfig now. Everybody's happy. Okay, so I mentioned earlier that I use the interfaces file and ifup for my networking because, well, network manager can be kind of odd. Network manager won't let me associate with an access point from the, if network manager is running and I decide I'm going to use iwconfig and associate to an access point, it won't associate because network manager prevents it. Lovely. So I have to stop the network manager service. And how do I do this? Well, it used to be that the only way to do it in the Debian world was you had to go into etc init.d and tell the service to start or stop or whatever. And Red Hat, you could do that. Or you could type service, the name of the service, and start or stop or whatever. A little shortcut, right? Debian's got service now too. Yay! I think that's the end of it. I couldn't come up with anything else that I was like, all right, what is somebody going to be like, oh my god, I can't figure out how to do this. So you can start asking questions now. But I just want to say I use Wikipedia for reference on that chart, and I think I'm going to add the chart to Wikipedia because the current version is that you have 6 charts all stacked up down above each other explaining them, and I'm like, that's too much to read. So, anybody have any questions?
I have one suggestion.
Microphone. I can hear them. Oh, but there's the recording. Okay. And I know it was heavy on the packaging.
Hi, I have one suggestion and one question. The suggestion for finding a shorter way of getting the version number for an RPM, mm-hmm. you can use the P switch, like RPM-QP, and it will tell you.
You're standing too close to the speaker, I think.
Oh, I don't, okay. Anyway, you can use RPM-QP, and it will tell you the RPM file name, which has all the package information in, or the version information in it. You had QI up there, which is the very verbose.
I thought
verbose.
P required that you have the package right there, though.
What's that?
Doesn't P say whenever you're going to give it a local package that's on
If
your
you
disk?
Do RPM-QP, it will basically list all the installed RPMs, and you can just grep for whatever you want. Okay. So, and the question I had was with the policy. I wrote a note and I left my phone
the
over there.
App cache policy?
Yeah, the app cache policy. Is there an aptitude equivalent to that?
Mm-mm,
or no?
I don't believe so.
Okay, so then what you mentioned that there were some differences of there, what there aptitude does and what apt-get does. If you installed something with aptitude, would app cache policy work?
Yes.
Okay.
The what is installed database is shared, but the why was it installed database is not.
Okay. So it just like as a dependency or?
Right. If you mix and match apt-get and aptitude, it won't know, they won't know why each other installed a certain package, whether it was a dependency or the chosen package, but they will know that it was installed. Okay. And yeah, apt-get and apt-cache and aptitude all have different sets of what they do, but aptitude seems to have a lot that's in the other two, so that in a lot of cases you can just use aptitude.
Next question.
I always talk so short. was I like talking too fast again?
Hush, Bridget.
Not a question. I've been doing this for too many years, so I have a few, but I think I know the answer to the directory stuff. I read something a long time ago. Several of the Unix distributions, including like even Solaris and stuff like that, they started moving things into those sysconfig directories, SE Linux directories for security purposes. Okay. And if you look at the desktop model, that's helpful as well because, well, I mean, Red Hat was more focused on server environments, but even on the desktop where now you can put a group, you know, put a particular user in a group to say, well, he's got access to do these kinds of things. If it's in a subdirectory other than Etsy, now it makes permissions easier. You don't have to fiddle with permissions on the specific files under Etsy. So it keeps those things grouped. So then the flip side of that in Debian was is that Stallman, who kind of started that whole Debian initiative, he likes everything to be as open as possible so that everyone can see everything. And it's claimed that he still has no password on his accounts. I doubt that that's true, but so turn. I think that's the historical you know background to that.
That seems. I can't imagine why you would have people other than administrators poking around in Etsy anyway. But okay, sure. Mm.
Next question.
What, nobody's going to try to, like, ask me apt trivia?
App trivia, anyone?
My app trivia is much better than my RPM trivia.
What are all the new
modes? What are all the what?
Like the moon thing, like cow. Have you ever seen
one
cow
sound? Oh.
Super cow, that's it.
Oh, yeah. The Easter egg here. Now, if we look at aptitude dash dash help, what's the last thing it says? This aptitude does not have super cow powers. They have to be lying. Believe them? It's an elephant being eaten by a snake, of course. I'm sorry, I should move this one upward. There. Now people who aren't tall can see it too. Okay, there you go. Easter egg time. I'm not in Gnome, so I can't free the fish.
Any other questions? Okay, everybody, thank you very much. Mackenzie Macro Morgan.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to put my blog URL on the thing, but it's yoy. My Wacom tablet's slid down and knocked the VGA out. That's my blog, and I'll have a link to the slides posted on there as soon as I get back to the internet. I know it's really long, so if you don't want to copy the whole thing down, just Google my name. Maybe Google my name with the word Ubuntu. You'll find it really easily.